meeting, and therefore we are formally opening this very important meeting. My name is Cindy Chikunga. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Police, Chikunga. We are going to have a very long day. We're starting now and we'll be in this house until 4:15 or 5 o'clock this afternoon. Let me first welcome members of parliament who are coming back from the constituency period to the second parliamentary session. I know they have stories to tell because I know they visited some police stations. So I'm just warning the department that you dare not tell us things that are not happening on the ground, because we know exactly what is happening. I also want to welcome the minister, who of course is attending our meeting today. We have met the minister particularly during the budget debate, and we've been following him as he makes important announcements, and I think we're expecting yet another important announcement today. And for us, it indicates the seriousness the department wants to minimize the space for criminals. But of course, announcements themselves are not equal to what we are expected to do on the ground. But in a special way, I want to welcome the sub-delegation, which is led by our brand new National Commissioner, Mr. Peggy Pelle. I just want to say here today that the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa assures all of us that we have the right to freedom and security of the person, and the South Africans, we really want to be secured. Personally, I think the appointment of our National Commissioner has been first awaited for by many of us, but we think it is an important move by the President and this government. We therefore welcome the appointment by the President, but we also welcome the appointment of Mr. Pelle as an individual. I believe that we need a hands-on approach if we are to win this war against crime. There is no way we're going to do things in a manner that is remote controlling whatever and win the war. I'm saying this understanding the very fact that the National Commissioner will be occupying, you know, the top management position, which in the main is about conceptual skills, 60%, probably followed by plus minus 30% of interpersonal skills for me, 10% of course of technical skills. But I think I'm confident that the minister possesses, the National Commissioner possesses all these skills and more. All that we want really as South Africans, and all that we want to participate to as South Africans, is a more efficient, a more vigorous, and a more effective manner in which, under the leadership of the National Commissioner, the plan to fight crime will be implemented. And I'm saying the plan because really I want to emphasize the fact that if we don't have a plan, we therefore not know as to where we are going. So for me, planning also is very important. I therefore once more want to welcome the National Commissioner and the sub-delegation, and we are looking forward to working with all of you. And I can assure you that as MPs, we are already doing our work. If the President can find time to visit areas unannounced, I can tell you it is very easy for us to do it. In fact, it will be the order of the day. We don't want red carpets, but what we want is to see that which happens every day. And therefore, unannounced visits will indeed be part of our program. And we'll be expecting the department not to question that, but to welcome it. We'll be doing it as members of parliament, and we'll not be doing it for the department. We'll also be checking whether the managers are doing it as well, so that all of us together can achieve more. I therefore will go back to today's program, which I think all of us have. The minister is going to brief us on the appointment of the ICT executive director, and we will be giving him something like 30 minutes, and we request that we stick to time so that we are able to move on to our briefing session. Over to you, Minister. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Chair. Good morning, and good morning, honorable members, the management of South African Police Service. Perhaps I must thank the Chair for being generous, giving us 30 minutes to interact on this point of the head of the ICD. I think it will take much less than that, just the announcement, maybe afterwards in the discussions. Firstly, just to say, Chair, that we are at a point where we have convinced ourselves about the person who should be heading the ICD. We followed the process of advertisement, shortlisting, interviews, and thereafter we then came to a conclusion on the people who were there, who were interviewed. Unanimous decision was taken by the panel, which consisted of the Minister of State Security, the DG of Social Development, and the Minister of Police. In the main, over and above what was in the advert, we wanted to satisfy ourselves whether people have not only memorized what is in the advert, but understand what the challenges of ICD is currently. Which is characterized by and large by the issues of leadership and organization, which is characterized by some challenges as it relates to finances, but also wanted to get a vision from each individual as to how do they think we will do what we announced at the budget vote during the question time of revamping the ICT. And we then went to the whole issue of the program and what needs to be done, particularly around the legislation in the main, trying to see whether the candidates we have, thank you, the candidates we have would actually assist in the strengthening of the civilian oversight. We then came to a conclusion that among three people who were shortlisted, Mr. Francois Pinal, Francois Huguenin is the person, I think I'm recalling 1995 here. Yes, Mr. Francois Huguenin is the person who are convinced that they will do the kind of job we want him to do, Chair. So that would be my submission, Chair, unless there are any questions insofar as this is concerned. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. According to the South African Police Service Act number 68 of 1995, the minister shall nominate a suitable qualified person for appointment to the office of executive director to head the directorate in accordance with a procedure to be determined by the minister in consultation with the parliamentary committee. The parliamentary committee shall, within a period of 30 parliamentary working days of the nomination in terms of subsection 1, confirm or reject such nomination. But before we go to that section of the Act, I will therefore allow members to ask clarity-seeking questions from the minister so that we can then proceed to the other aspect which I've just mentioned. If there is any question you want to ask regarding the process, regarding the name that has been announced right now. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chair. Minister, I'm just very interested to know if, and I presume we will have sight of this gentleman's qualifications for the post in our deliberations. And I would also be very interested to know who the other candidates were who were interviewed by, I presume, the minister's panel. Thank you.
Any other questions? Honourable Craig.
Thanks, Comrade Chairperson, and thanks to the Minister. One of the things that one has become increasingly aware of is the necessity for people in the ICT to have a legal background with many of the issues that come up. Could we just get an indication whether Mr. Francois Beckman indeed had those qualifications? Because I think that would be a very important aspect of the requirement for his appointment. Thanks.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I also assume we'll get the information later, but if the Minister could just give us a brief overview or slightly more than that as well. What experience has this man had, in what sort of areas, and for how long? And I do think we all welcome the fact that we are finally getting somebody appointed as a permanent director, because we all know there's been a temporary one there for a long time.
Okay, let me also acknowledge the presence of the NCOP members, and you are most welcome. You are free to ask questions and to participate. Thank you very much for attending. In the absence of further questions, Minister.
Well, thanks, Chair, and thanks, for the questions. In fact, the questions are interrelated. They generally want to know about the candidate. As I said earlier on, that in the leadership, mostly it's areas related to legal and finances. Mr. Francois has been in the public office for some time. He has served as a lawyer, as a qualified lawyer. At some point, he was the chairperson of the Standing Committee, SCOPA, on accounts here in Parliament. The year is 2002 to 2005. But what we'll do, Chair, would be to leave with the committee the the people here, the candidates. In fact, there were three candidates. It was one, the acting Mr. Baloyi. It was Mrs. Toke, who's with the NPA currently, and there was Mr. Bugman, but who leave the details with the committee, so that the people are able to actually satisfy themselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Minister. Probably the next question will be to ask if members are satisfied with the process that was followed, and of course the very fact that we have to deal with this matter as the portfolio committee or committees within 30 days. I'm aware that we've been having an acting member heading that department unit for quite a long time, and probably as the committee will not want to delay the department. But let me hear what members are to say over this issue. Mr. Greg, Honorable Bloom. Thank you.
No, thanks again, Comrade Chairperson. I think during the answers that the Minister has given us, he's indicated he's going to give us a copy of the CVs of the various applicants that they considered. I think we all agree that the appointment of the new head of the ICD is urgent. Whilst I'm sure that we're entitled to take 30 days, I don't think that's the length of time we'd like to take. I would like to suggest, Chair, that we perhaps agree that we take today to apply our minds, to have a look at the CVs, and that tomorrow as a committee we then take a decision on this matter. That would be my suggestion, Chief.
There is already a suggestion that indeed we take the CVs to satisfy ourselves as the committee, and we finalize this matter, because indeed we are going to have another sitting tomorrow.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much, Minister, and everybody here. No, I think that the Minister has applied his mind to this issue. And personally, myself, I know Francois, and I think it's a very good decision that the Minister has taken. Personally, I know him. I've worked with him for a very long time. I don't think that we must delay this thing. I mean, there was an acting for, and we as Parliament are always talking about against acting. Yes, the minister took that decision. Let's leave the minister. We can look at that thing, but I am saying that the minister has applied his mind.
What probably the Honorable Plum is saying is that we can speed up the finalization of the matter, even if it is not now, but probably by tomorrow. And therefore, we can, I think he's agreeing with the Honorable Craig.
Chair, absolutely. If we can have size of the documentation, and if we can fit it into the schedule, I really think 5 years, 6 years. I don't know how long it's been. They've had acting forever. It really is incumbent upon us. But as long as we see the documentation, we read through it and satisfy ourselves that we're happy with the appointment. Let's do this thing. I mean, we've been waiting for long enough.
Honourable Reverend Mishri.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was going to say that coming to a decision tomorrow has to be conditional, and the condition should be we have all the necessary documentation, because many times some of us, particularly from Max Building, do not have access to documents on time. So I would propose that we agree that we do not rush into this and exclude people who do not have signed off all the necessary documentation. I would agree that we make a decision tomorrow on condition that we all have sight of the documentation, because we don't all know the gentleman. Thank you.
Yes, no, I think we are in agreement. We therefore are going to ensure the secretary here will ensure that we all get the CVs so that we can satisfy ourselves, and therefore we'll then be able to finalize this matter as the committee tomorrow. Thank you very much, Minister. I think we have finalized this matter, unless you want to say something.
No, Chair, just to thank you and the committee on this matter, and appreciate also the fact that the emphasis which is being put here about the urgency of us resolving this matter goes well with our work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That matter is finalized. We are therefore now going to proceed to the program, which is in the main about the information sharing session. This is informed by the resolution that we took during our public, in fact, budget hearing, that we definitely need the department to come before the committee and give us an in-depth understanding on what the department is doing with regards to all the programs that are there. We therefore are going to now hand over to the National Commissioner, understanding the fact that he's been in the office just over a period of 2 days, and how he's going to proceed. I think he's free to allow whoever is heading a program to brief the committee, but definitely we will want to hear his voice before that happens. Over to you, National Commissioner.
I hear you are talking about the National Commission. Who is the National Commission?
I don't know the National Commission. Who is the National Commission? Maybe if you can introduce him. I don't know who is the National Commission.
Okay. I think in my welcoming address, I mentioned the fact that Mr. Peggy Pele was announced by the President as the National Commissioner, and I welcomed him in particular. So Mr. Bloom was delayed, and he missed that aspect.
I apologize, Chairperson, but is this Mr. Pele? Yes.
Over to you, Mr. Pele.
Well, thanks, Chairperson. I'm sorry to be technically challenged here. But thanks to the Commissioner on my side. I don't know, maybe to start with, this is not a very small team. When I'm satisfied with this in the delegation and management of the South African Police Service, I would love to hear individual voice and name, so that it creates a better understanding and better interchange if you know the name and you put the name on the face, rather than just, I spoke to that police. So maybe if, through your permission, the members can quickly, individually introduce themselves. You agree on that? Okay. Well, I've been introduced. My name is Peggy Pele, tasked with the duties to lead the South African Police Service in the Republic of South Africa. Thanks.
Thank you. My name is Anwar Dramat. I'm Deputy National Commissioner, Head of the Directorate for Priority Crimes Investigation.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Martha Stander, Deputy National Commissioner, Personnel Services and Organizational Development.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Andre Price, Deputy National Commissioner, Operational Services.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm Richard Mdoli. I'm Divisional Commissioner of Crime Intelligence.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Bonang Christina Mgwenya, Assistant Commissioner in the SAPS, standing in for Divisional Commissioner Pashani, Personnel Services.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Vinesh Wunu, the Component Head for General Investigation Detective Service.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Leighton Shabalala, Protection and Security Services.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Nokule Mbata, Office of the National Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Divisional Commissioner Mala, Head of Detective Services.
Thank you, Chair. Peter Tway, Divisional Commissioner, Criminal Records and Forensic Sciences.
Malo Kunchwe, Career Management in the Police.
Chairperson Stefan Skatta, Financial and Administration Services in the Police. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Arnold Lamour, Divisional Commissioner, Visible Policing.
Thank you, Chairperson. Gary Cruiser, Divisional Commissioner, Training, Southern Police Service.
Thank you. I am Leah Mufume. I'm an Assistant Commissioner representing the Divisional Commissioner, Supply Chain Management.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Not a very small delegation, but surely is enough delegation to answer questions, including the stations that you have visited. And surely we would not be here to tell what does not exist on the stations. We're trying our best to tell what is existing, but more than that, correct where people feel it to be corrected so that the organization can go forward, which is not a very small organization. Surely we'll be getting figures and going forward. But before we go for programs, we are subjected and instructed by the Constitution of the South Africa, and also there are pieces of legislation that are instructing us and directing us which direction to follow, especially those of the South African Police that you have quoted, and many other pieces of legislation that give direction and instruction to us to achieve some few things. Some of those things would be prevention of crime, combating crime, investigating crime, maintaining public order, protect and secure the inhabitants of the Republic of South Africa and their property, and uphold and enforce the law. But now and again, there will be other interventioning activities, sometimes documents, sometimes pronouncements. For instance, there would be intervention when the state of the nation is given by the president. The president can't just speak and we say, we've got our plan, we've got our strategic plan, and we can't listen to him. Now and again, there will be those interventions. There will be interventions when it comes to the budget speech of the minister. And now and again, to see how do we follow those interventions and how do they instruct us as we move forward. For instance, we were instructed by the State of the Nation, by President Zuma, that was given on the 3rd June 2009, when he said together we must do more to fight crime, and our aim is to establish a transformed, integrated, modernized, properly resourced, and well-managed criminal justice system. It is also critically important to improve the efficiency of the courts and the performance of prosecutors and to enhance detective, forensic, and intelligence services. This work has started in earnest and it will be undertaken with new energy and vigor, unquote. That also puts some new priorities alongside the existing plans and strategic direction. As such, we will have to speak and we'll have to respond to those new priorities. Definitely, there could be 10 priorities given, but we'll seek ours among those priorities and make sure that we take them forward. Some of them, and then we'll be following the strategic, as I've said, like the medium-term framework, like the program, the government program of action, and as a part, a reviewer of the criminal justice system. Well, we will sometimes stick with our strategic planning and make sure that that is happening and informed and instructed by our own budget. And of course, as I said, there will be in between the annual plans that we will be following. The president went on to talk about intensifying the fight against crime and corruption towards cohesive, caring, and sustainable communities. Indeed, the coming together of the agencies of law enforcement and communities cannot be underestimated and cannot be compromised. We cannot fight any crime at any given point, national, locally, nationally, and internationally, if we are not part of the communities in which we live. So that has to be the part of sustainability, of transformation, and understanding our terrain of activity. As such, we have to enhance the capacity of detective, forensic intelligence, and visible policy. Establish and capacitate all directorates, especially priority crime investigation, and put the systems in place to make sure that that happens. As such, the program alignment as continues, we have to combat the organized crime, especially the crime that makes all of us jitter as we go to sleep. That crime will be against women and children. I think we need more vigor, we need more energy, and we need to mobilize all internal energies to fight the scourge of the abuse of women and children as all agencies. We have to be collective. As I've said, promoting the participation of communities through structures, several of them that are on the pipeline, and make sure that the border and the borders, I know there are discussions about the looking of our borders, that it's suspected to be weak at the present moment. We need to strengthen that our citizens are safe because our borders are safe. Eradicating corruption and fraud, we have to fight the scourge also with all vigor and energy. Well, there is a big one coming, 2010, and looking at the programs then, that will be talking to all these aides and all, and hoping now and again we'll be meeting and trying to take ourselves forward and make sure that we control this sketch of crime in this country, and we reclaim our streets, and we make our kids able to play not until 6, then they are called by the mothers because they are unsafe by then, but to play as they wish at the night because those streets are safe. That is a direction that we'd love to take together with everybody here. Having said that, then I will allow the members, individual members of the management, to go through program per program. Thanks very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner. Because you are meeting us for the first time, I should think it will be proper for us as well to introduce ourselves. I introduced myself. I said I'm Cindy Chikunga. And each time I introduce myself, I always say I'm a South African. Because when I say Chikunga, some people think I'm a foreigner. No. I'm a South African born and bred. I'm the chairperson. Can we start the side and then move that side?
Thanks, Comrade Chairperson. My name is Greg Schneeman, member of the African National Congress, member of this committee, and I'm also the ANC whip for the committee. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. My name is Angie Muliwadi. I'm a member of the ANC, member of this portfolio committee. Thanks.
My name is Kenneth Mishre. I'm the member of this committee and also the ANC.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Diane Kohler-Barnard from the DA. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Debbie Schaefer. I'm from the Democratic Alliance.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Mluleki George from the Congress of the People.
We also have our staff, Jeremy, the Secretary of the Committee. Somewhere we have Shamila, the Secretary to the Chairperson. We have BC, the Committee Researcher. Those are the members who are supporting us as the committee. Let us take our first presentation on Program 1, Administration.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, Chair. Will we have an opportunity to put some questions through in relation to the program alignment to the new police commissioner?
Yeah, I think we're going to take questions after the presentation. Yes. Let's allow the presentation, then we're going to take questions, otherwise it's going to delay us, it's going to eat on our time.
Because now that you have, I'm fine, because I wanted also to ask the question, because I think we must want more to ask questions to the National Commissioner, because, you know, we had the presentations for the budget, but fine, we'll do that after the presentations.
Is the first presentation on administration?
Shaskata. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Commissioner. The first presentation is on Program 1, Administration. And Program 1, as we all know and as we've said to ourselves previously, consists of a number of elements. One of the elements is financial services. Now, quite a lot of the numerical aspects, members will remember, we have dealt with during the meeting of 17th May. This program, to a large extent, is prescribed across by the public service and therefore quite similar in terms of its format. The mandate, the goals and the objectives and the five-year review of the element of financial services will be the following. Obviously, the mandate stems from the PFMA, the Public Finance Management Act, and the Treasury Regulations. Secondly, the function of financial services from top to bottom in the organization are the financial function is concerned with the flow of funds to, from, and within the department, and in particular, the acquisition of funds through the budgeting process, the application of funds via the Centers of Financial Responsibility or Cost Centers. Members will remember that previously we've also explained to the committee that SAPs are divided into various cost centers such as divisions, units, provinces, cluster stations and so forth. Then also about the cash flow management and the liquidity of the department, and then also to report and administer a lot of transactions. The reporting is obviously also very important, and once again, in respect of the 08-09 financial year, an annual report inclusive of the financial statements will be submitted before the end of September by the National Commissioner and the Minister. Then secondly, a very important aspect also the way forward will be to perform multi-year financial planning and formulate the develop and develop the estimates of national expenditure for SAPs, That is the Red Book, as members know it, the estimates of public expenditure or national expenditure, which we've dealt with during the budget vote. Thirdly, apportioning of allocation between programs, functions, activities, and items, and various, literally millions of transactions are being performed by SAPs each day during countrywide in South Africa. If we move to the next slide, number 9, we refer more in depth then to the monthly reporting, quarterly reporting, and annual reporting on financial aspects, as well as other functional aspects, subject to auditing by the Auditor General. This will also become a very important tool for this committee once legislative oversight starts, I assume during September, October, and 40 pages of annual financial statements will be included in this regard. One big organizational priority, which we've also indicated in the annual performance plan, is that we try to keep a ratio of 73%, of not more than 73%, spending on compensation vis-a-vis 27% spending on other operational expenditures, the reason being so that we have a sound and healthy split between compensation expenditure and other expenditures such as fuel and oil and spares and maintenance of vehicles and deployment of our members out there. If we look a little bit at the five-year review, the following will come to mind. Please, as I said to members, this is very, very high level. It's a three or four high-level indicators which we will indicate to members of the committee and which we will elaborate on more in depth during the legislative oversight meeting to come during October. The five-year review, including the successes. Now, one of the most prominent financial indications is the spending performance against the budget allocation. SAPS fully utilized the voted funds allocated during the last five financial years. Normally, if one has a big surplus of funds which has not been spent without any plausible reason, it will indicate some inefficiency. In the past 5 years, SAPS has actually spent less than or deposited less than 1,000 rand each year back to the National Revenue Fund. Secondly, unqualified audit opinions received for the last 5 years, certain matters, other matters, were reported in other areas, but SAPS received unqualified audit opinions for the last 5 years, and all indications are that it will also be once again for the last financial year. If we look at another performance indicator, that is the performance against budget. The resources used in accordance with a legally adopted budget as appropriated by Parliament, including financial limits established by appropriate legislative authorities. Zero-min for all programs were well within 8% limit, is the legislative threshold, and we've indicated some of the variances in terms of the five programs, where you have a 0.8% variance for program one, for program 2, a 0.6% variance, program 3, 1.1% variance, program 4, 0.6% variance, and program 5, 3.5% variance. I think members will agree that the variances are marginal of nature, so we will be able to conclude that SAPS did indeed spend in accordance with the wishes of Parliament, is a threshold, especially if of 8% is also taken into account. The last spending priority or that we would like to indicate to members of the committee is a very important aspect, and our national commissioner referred to it specifically, and that is, are we spending according to the priorities of government? And we are referring there and say that we are indeed spending according to the priorities referred to in the medium-term budget policy statement of the nation address, budget speech, estimates of national expenditure, and strategic and operational plans. The focus, as members will recall, were essentially on the capacity building initiatives such as additional personnel, modernization and expansion of the vehicle fleet, modernization and expansion of the integrated justice system, especially the criminal justice system and modernization thereof, with huge amounts forthcoming. General equipment such as the bulletproof vests, ports of entry and rail police intensification, and then also capital infrastructure and so forth. Those are basically the five priorities that we would like to put forward to this committee at this point in time, but obviously we will also provide it to the committee more in depth in the annual report when the time comes. May I just say, Madam Chairperson, that there are 80 transparencies, and I would therefore like to now pass on the presentation and training to my colleague, Division Commissioner Cruz.
Thanks, Chairperson. Procedure on the review of the last 5 years. The first thing is that the needs for training is driven by organizational needs and priorities. The other key strategic drivers are the human resource development strategy of the public service, the review of the national qualification framework and establishment of quality council for training occupancy, which is very critical in terms of our vocational training. We firstly had to go around the process of institutionalizing outcome-based learning, new learning programs since 2004. All our new learning programs are designed and addressed the principle of outcome-based learning. That is, the focus is what are essential for the learner to do at the end of the learning experience. The learner can demonstrate what they know and have learned. Assessments does not only include examination, but also observation, portfolios of evidence in the workplace, role plays, experiential learning, and also comply, all our programs comply with education training quality assurance bodies like SACEDA. We also, in terms of the huge needs identified by the organization, we had to increase our capacity in division training. In 2004, we had 10 training institutions, 5 basic, 4 in-service, and 1 management and leadership institute. Since then, we have established additional 15, additional 5 basic training institutions, additional 9 in-service and specialized training institutions, and an additional management and leadership institution. In addition to this capacity, provincial training was also established to ensure in-service training, mentoring, and coaching takes place in the provinces. To comply with the education training development practice and standards of training function was all consolidated in the police. This supported the initiatives undertaken to provide quality education and training and development to staff members by providing opportunities not only in terms of skill development, but also to obtain credits for further tertiary training. We can say that the National Certificate in Basic Policing has been accredited by universities, and also recently our Junior Management Program has also been accredited at the degree level NQF 7 at the universities. We have to institutionalize learning programs aligned to the NQF, subsequent in terms of occupational specific qualifications already in place, the National Certificate in Basic Policing Practice, National Certificate in Resolving of Crime, NQF 5, National Certificate in Forensic Science, NQF 5, and we're in the process of finalizing dog handling and close protection qualification. We also had to re-establish our partnership with SACEDA. This was done. The SACEDA is the quality assurance body which enables us to align our qualifications to tertiary education. SACEDA forms part of the regulatory compliance in terms of the Skills Development Act, and therefore it was compulsory for us to participate in that. The other key thing identified by the organization was the issue of ABET, internships and learnerships, which was aligned according to government's HR strategy. The ABET Literacy Development Program is one of the division's flagship, and we have over 1,300 members presently on the program. Members have been given opportunity to enable them to achieve essential skills of reading and writing, and also enable them to eventually achieve their matric. We also have a program NQF 3 and NQF 4 program for people who completed the ABET program so they can continue to further their education at the tertiary level. Internships, addressing areas of scarce skills in the organization and simultaneously granted the opportunity to credit and students to obtain these skills and working experience to be gainfully employed. Here in the IT environment, supply chain management, finance, HRM, we have internships over the last 3 years. Learnerships complying with the Skills Development Act through giving opportunity to members within the organization to develop their skills and ability with specific environment by combining theory and practice which results in occupational qualifications within the National Qualification Framework. Then we have also institutionalization of management leadership programs from basic to executive level. In 2004 we only had one program. We can now safely say we have a program from basic right to executive level, and we are busy aligning it from the issue of a degree level right up to a master's level with tertiary institutions at the moment. The program addresses generic management theory but also internal administration efficiency elements to ensure practical application in the workplace. The prioritization of key organizational needs. Here we have the issue of women and children, very critical. We developed the domestic violence learning program, the children and youth risk learning program, sexual offenses program for all detectives, and sexual offenses program for all the frontline members in the organization. For detectives, we have now completed the resolving of crime as a qualification for them. We've introduced the commander's learning program so all commanders and detectives at the station level can go through it. And we've also introduced the basic crime investigation practice at the station level. Intelligence, we've introduced a new human intelligence spacecraft learning program, which is also on the NQF level for all intelligence operatives. And invisible policing, we have crime prevention, sector policing, dog handling among the key priorities in that area itself. In terms of our key priorities over the next 5 years, we implement the plan including the performance agreement of the division commissioner, senior manager, and performance announcement plans of members. This is applicable to all programs and sub-programs. Our key strategic objectives for this year is to establish a knowledge management capacity for knowledge assets, to establish a created ETD practitioner's capability, to establish ETD centers of excellence, and I can also say that we've again this month been ordered 4 more ISOEs from SOCETA for excellence of our 4 basic training. We now have 10 institutions who have won that award. To create the next generation of police officers to advance ETD practice in the culture of learning. To ensure return on investment in human capital through provision of appropriate and responsive ETD solutions. The establishment of formal and purposeful ETD partnerships. I think very critical in terms of the President's speech, we need to ensure we develop partners with communities. The establishment of ETD management practice for policing, and the development of ETD solutions for emerging operational priorities. I just want to be careful to give impetus to the ETD strategy, ensuring that our SAPS members are adequately equipped with the knowledge, skills, abilities, and attributes that are necessary for yielding of the outcomes of the core functions of the operational divisions of SAPS, to which is to deliver the core policing services to achieve the vision of SAPS. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Program personnel services. We have got 3 strategic goals, and each strategic goal which will be discussed as I continue. In terms of the 5-year review, including successes, during the year 2005 and 6, the target was to maintain a minimum workforce of 85% of total workforce. Actual performance, a minimum workforce of 99.7 was maintained. In the year 2006 and 7, in the financial year 2006 and 7, the target was to maintain a minimum workforce of 90% in terms of the approved establishment. A minimum workforce of 99.9% was maintained. In the financial year 2007 and 8, the target was to maintain a minimum workforce of 92% in terms of the personnel allocations, and the actual performance was the minimum force of 99.8% maintained. The other target was to redesign organizational and post structures for all divisions, provinces, and stations. There was a delay in consultation with organized labor, but finally the station structures were redesigned. In the financial year 2008 and 2009, the target was to finalize and implement station structures and also to maintain a minimum workforce, of which 99.7 minimum workforce was maintained. And the process of finalizing and implementing structures were finalized in respect of station and cluster structures, and also having enabling structures for provincial and national levels. Strategic goal number two, which is the institutionalizing of an employee assistance service. During the financial year 2005 and 2006, the target was to provide support in at least 70% of instances where requests for support from members and families occurred, and also to expose 20% of service members to proactive employment assistance services per annum. The reason why it's cutting across the target and the actual performance, Madam Chair, is that we achieved in both areas. A continuation. In the financial year 2007 and 2008, the target was to provide proactive and reactive support in at least 80% of instances where requests for support from members occurred. The programs were suicide prevention, wellness programs, and ethics and anti-corruption. 21,774 employees were reached, Madam Chair. In terms of the reactive support, we achieved 100%. For the financial year 2008-2009, the target was to provide support in 100% of instances where requests for support from members and their families occurred. In terms of the reactive services, we responded to 100% of those requests. And another target was to expose 30% of SAPS personnel establishments to proactive employment assistance services interventions. In this area, 37% of the members within the establishment were exposed to the proactive services. The third strategic goal, Madam Chair, the institutionalizing of a professional service ethos. For the financial year 2005-2006, the target was to finalize 70% of the outstanding cases. We did achieve. For the period 2006 and 2007, the target was to finalize 70% of reported disciplinary cases within 60 calendar days. Cases finalized were 73.9%. For the financial year 2007 and 2008, the target was to finalize 70% of reported disciplinary cases within 60 calendar days. It seems fit for me to indicate, Madam Chair, that during that financial year, we had our regulations categorized in three. The reason being that the 1996 regulations were to be reviewed. And in terms of those regulations were reviewed, and in terms of finalization of cases which were outstanding in terms of those regulations, 77.3 cases were finalized. And in 2005, as I rightly indicated, that regulations were reviewed. We had regulations 2005 and 2006. Because of the gaps which were identified, we had to make an amendment in the same financial year. And in terms of cases which were reported in that financial year, 83% of cases were finalized. For the financial year 2008-2009, the target was to finalize 70% of reported disciplinary cases within 60 calendar days. That is in terms of the 2006 regulations. Cases finalized in that financial year, we reached 42%, Madam Chair. Our priorities in terms of the next 5 years include the following: the goals, the objectives, and implementation plan. We are prioritizing the permanent employment of reservists. We want to finalize the restructuring process. We will be continuing with institutionalizing of a professional service ethos, and our focus will be on the enhancing of the mainframe capacity, which will ensure data integrity. Also, we are reviewing the discipline regulations together with the grievance procedure. That is after identifying the gaps. We will also be focusing on the swift finalization of disciplinary cases. Another focus area will be enhancing capacity in terms of managers within and establishing disciplinary units to ensure that we are able to achieve in terms of finalizing those cases swiftly. Under the strategic goal, institutionalizing of the employee assistance services, we will be focusing on the following, Madam Chair. Targeted proactive interventions, which will be mostly preventative, and the reactive support, the effective implementation of employee health and wellness strategic framework, and also the job access strategic framework. We will also be focusing on the HIV and AIDS workplace management, which is a priority within our organization, Madam Chair, and also the disability management. I hand over to the Divisional Commissioner, Career Management.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, National Commissioner. In terms of our programs, we have to provide a human resource plan and maintenance of the minimum workforce levels in terms of the approved establishment by the National Commission of the Police. The HR, the human resource plan is submitted annually in terms of the medium-term expenditure framework. For now, we have the medium-term the human resource plan submitted for 2007 to 2010. Our establishment has grown from 134 since 2004 to 182,754 currently at the end of March this year. The targets were set in terms of maintenance of the minimum workforce levels. We have also maintained, as personnel service has indicated, the average of 99.8 of the approved establishment. We are also responsible for employment equity as a priority in terms of all government programs. There has been a steady but slow improvement, but there is improvement as the table that has been provided underneath will illustrate the movement in terms of employment equity. In terms of our programs also, we are responsible for institutionalizing performance management system. We have a compliance rate of over 90% in terms of implementation of performance management, both at individual level as well as at institutional level. Compliance levels have increased for the current year, particularly at level 1 to 12, as well as at level 13 and above. That is senior management level. Performance management system, we have also improved it and focused it. Currently, we have just revised the station commissioner's assessment framework as well as the Provincial Commissioner's Assessment Framework in line with the restructuring work that has been undertaken in the organization. We were also instructed to assist in the establishment of the Directorate for Priority Crimes Investigation, which is the work that has just been completed. We also have a mandate to improve conditions of employment of members through the Public Service Coordination Bargaining Council negotiations, as well as the Safety and Security Bargaining Council negotiations. We are currently in the season for negotiations in terms of the Public Service Bargaining Council negotiations. We have also introduced a skills framework for the organization to actually manage the outflow of scarce skills such as scientists, such as pilots, and so forth, and task force, and so on. And this framework has indeed actually assisted the organization in terms of the movement out of the organization in terms of these skills that are highly sought. We, in terms of our mandate together with training division, we also have career centers. We've established them in all provinces, both static career centers as well as mobile career centers, where we actually introduce careers of the police to young people of our country, because we all know that policing is no longer about muscle and speed, but also we need intellect as well as fine people in terms of entering police as a career in their lives. So we go to schools, we go to tertiary institutions, as well as universities to actually introduce careers of the police. We also have a mandate to ensure that managers in the police are actually attuned in terms of labor and industrial relations in this country. Therefore, we ensure that we give them skills in terms of mediation, resolution of conflict, so that at the lowest level of the establishment, they are able to resolve labor relations problems. In terms of what we will be doing in the next 5 years, at macro level, we will be continuing to ensure the human resource plan in terms of the approved establishment. We will be continuing to work on the employment equity in the organization and submitting our plans with the Department of Labor as required. We will also continuously be providing human resource plan in terms of the medium-term expenditure periods. We will be continuing to improve performance management system, particularly the linkage of individual performance to institutional performance to begin to realize a better impact of the chain. We will continue to improve conditions of employment of our members and continue to improve the labor relations in the police. And I'm sure we will all agree that the labor relations in the police has been better managed in the last 2 years. We will also continue to improve the quality of life of our members by continuing to look after their welfare in terms of benefits and consulting with them in terms of the issues that actually affect them in terms of conditions of employment. I will hand over to my colleague from supply chain. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, Listener, Commissioner. In terms of supply chain management, looking at the 5-year review, including our successes, I start with the vehicles that we purchased and distributed to provinces. That slide indicates the rent value as well as the numbers that we purchased. And then I just want to show on the right-hand side, that would indicate the total number of vehicles, the fleet that we had in the different financial years. For instance, in the 2008-2009, when we purchased 7,270 vehicles, then it brought our total fleet to 41,921. The next thing that I want to indicate relates to the firearm. For the previous 5 years, this slide indicates how many firearms we had purchased, so that is the columns on the left-hand side. Now, with regards to firearms, what happens is that we continuously withdraw firearms from provinces and especially from the colleges for the purpose of repairs and services, and then we reissue them. And some of them will be boarded and replaced as we purchase new ones. Then bulletproof vests, the columns on the right-hand side, our purchases from 2004-05, we had 15,729 males. And then in 2006-2007, we began purchasing bulletproof vests for males as well as for females. And then we did the same in 2008 and in 2009. Then moving to our radio technical services, 2004-05 financial year, we assisted with the implementation of a radio infrastructure in the Comoros Islands. This is when they had their elections, and we assisted them with the installation of a radio system, as well as training their technicians, so that once our technicians were out of the country, they can continue maintaining their system. The same happened in the GRC in this financial year. And then we also started with the Gauteng TETRA system. 2005-2006, we had to install video equipment so that our air wing could be able to do a land survey while they are flying and be able to see what is happening on the ground. This included the installation of night vision. 2007-2008, the Durban migration project, what you mean here is that we had to migrate our radio network system to an area where we could get better frequency, enhancing communication, and also to align to the other entities such as ESCOM. And also we did our upgrading in Cape Town, where the system was installed in 1996, so it was too old, we had to upgrade it. 2008-2009, with the elections, we made sure that there was communication in all the polling stations and all the control centers. And when it came to the inauguration of our state president, the heads of state of different countries came with their own security. So we had to end their own system. So we had to adapt this so that they can function within our country. Under building projects, in total for the past 5 years, we have established 10 new stations. These are stations that we built from scratch, and then 25 were re-established. This is where we had major renovations of the stations.
looking at the status of recommendations by previous committees in the 2005-06 financial year, we were told to put a system in place to ensure fair distribution of vehicles at stations. So what we did there, we reissued a circular, a previous circular of 1998, as well as a new one of 2007. This basically focused on the criteria for allocation of vehicles. For instance, that the resource allocation guide must be followed, that the presidential and priority stations must receive priority, and also when a vehicle is issued, that we should take consideration of the road conditions and the purpose of that vehicle. In the 2006-2007 recommendations, mention was made of the distribution of 67,000 sales per province, and that table indicates the distribution at that stage. I would like to indicate that as this was in 2006-2007, we have improved in this area as more and more sales were purchased through the financial year, and we are now standing at, by the end of 2009 financial year, we're standing at 113,580 sales. The current status of the Gauteng radio communication network, we have got the Tetra project, which is 98% complete. We still have two stations that are not completed, being the Temba and the Winterfell, there where the Hi-Fi is not yet completed. You will recall that Temba and Winterfell were part of the Northwest, and when we looked at the Gauteng system, they were not part, but we are working on that now. The challenge that we have is we still awaiting a record of decision from the Department of Environmental Affairs, as well as ESCOM to assist us with electricity, but there's continuous communication with them, and so that they can assist us and we can complete that as well. Bulletproof vests, the number of functional members at the end of the 2008-2009 financial year was 133,063. That is functional members, because it's functional members utilize bulletproof vests. And then the total number of vests were 210,670. So each and every province has got a buffer stock, which they utilize for their reservists. Challenges that we have with regards to bulletproof vests is that members performing operational duties do not like to wear bulletproof vests, but we have taken corrective measures on that, issuing an instruction recently that all bulletproof vests must be placed on each and every member's personal inventory, as well as that all operational members must bring their bulletproof vests with when they report on duty, and line managers must assist us in monitoring this and enforcing it. Then lastly is our plan for the next 5 years. We will continue to formulate policy, standing orders, as well as guidelines relating to supply chain matters. We will manage the budget allocated to us, and then effective radio communication, which is the Tetra system. We would like to have it in all provinces. Currently, it's only in operational in Gauteng, and we have a project going on in the Eastern Cape. The other thing is the effective monitoring of vehicles, provision of necessary resources as we support our operational members and the provinces to be able to function effectively. And then we want to continue to address accessibility for people with disabilities. Currently, at our stations and buildings, we have got 694 stations that are easily accessible. And we have to address the remaining 420, and an amount of 40 million was approved for us to address that. And the other thing is managing our procurement contracts, movable assets and inventories, facilities, the vehicle fleet, looking at our mechanical service, radio technical services, as I've already indicated, as well as our building and access services. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, on this short, long, medium administration portion, I think we are there. We'll be moving to program two with your direction of discussions or continue, but program one is for the time being done.
Yeah, thank you very much. We are on time, so we suppose we will be breaking for trade quarter to 11. We therefore can take few questions on this presentation until a quarter to 11 when we are going to break for tea. I just want to remind members that this is an information sharing session. So the questions that we'll be asking in the main will be asking the department to clarify an issue, but not like to account on an incident, a particular incident that happened somewhere. Just want to clarify that point. This is an information session, sharing session. We want to know more as to what the department is doing in a particular program. I just want to emphasize that. We are just going to take hands. Honorable Greg, yes, 1, 2, 3, 4, yes, those are the hands. And that's all.
Thanks, Chairperson. I've just got a couple. Are we allowed to ask more than one question? Can we ask a few questions at a time?
Yeah, I think we can ask questions. If we don't cover everybody, then we'll go for tea, come back and continue asking our questions.
No, thanks, Jay. Just in terms of administration, Program One, the issue of training. What I'd just like to understand is there an actual plan for training? Because they've told us quite a bit about the training program, etc. But is there a plan to train X number of people per year? Just like to have clarity as to whether that there is such a plan in place, and whether it's possible we can get more details on that as a committee. Then, on the issue of personnel. On page 15, health and wellness, it talks about the presenter didn't really go into much detail, but one of the questions I've got is that we're seeing an increasing number of police officers who take their own lives, take the lives of their families, and are involved in shooting others. It's regularly in the news. And I'm just wondering whether, in fact, does this program actually deal with that, those issues? If so, is it really effective? I'm just trying to get an understanding, because the question I keep asking myself, why is this actually happening? So I'm just wondering, is the program really effective? And the other thing is I'd like to ask as well, what is there in a station, for instance, to actually assess which of these officers are in distress? Because I imagine when you pull out a gun and kill your family and then shoot yourself, you must be under stress. So I'm just trying to get some understanding on that. Thanks, Chair. Then they talked under the administration career, or under career pathing, spoke about the scarce skills allowance. Could you just get some more clarity on that? What is it actually doing? And has it really been effective? So I'd like to just get clarity on that. And included in that, they spoke about the expanding or the improving of the quality of life of officers and their families. If we could just get an understanding of what that's about. And then the last question, Chair, that I really have relates to vehicles, supply chain on page 21. If I looked at the increase of the number of vehicles purchased per year versus the actual increase in total, you'll see that those don't match. Now, I understand that some of those vehicles may be withdrawn, but can we just get some more clarity on that? And also just particularly around our vehicle management, whether that's really effective. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Kulabanat.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, just starting from the top here, if I may start with reservists, there does seem to be, a call to Pretoria head office seems to have confirmed that there's now, I think it was mentioned in our last briefing, a moratorium on taking on SAS reservists. And I do understand they're busy restructuring the system and what to do with it, and how perhaps to upgrade and update the regulations and what have you. But I need to know if it's a national moratorium and how long it intends to stand, because there are many people applying to become reservists, and they're quite dejected when they're turned away. And I think they're invaluable. Some stations just literally can't run without them. Also, it was a question to, and I don't know that we haven't really looked at it, and I don't know that it's included in here, but as we have the National Police Commissioner to hand, I know we've had the deadline last year in June, when the last crime statistics were released has now passed. I'm just wanting to know when they will be released this year, if we have a date, or if in fact they are at all to be released. I also want to know what's happening with the falsification of statistics. Certainly, I know the ICD and certain members are investigating the matter, but is this being investigated by the SAPS, or has it all been outsourced to the ICD? And I'm also very concerned about the whistleblowers. They're being targeted, threatened, sometimes suspended, and I don't know that SAP shouldn't be offering them some sort of protection. Borders are, of course, a major issue. The Auditor General and indeed our own on-the-ground research has shown the borders barely exist. Now, I see what's put aside here, but I'm very interested to know if the SAPs are actually in active discussions with the SANDF, because there was always this suggestion that it should never have been taken from the SANDF and should go back perhaps to them. So I'm interested to know if we're going to put a lot of our resources into that, or should it be handled by the SANDF. Looking at at administration career management, I see we've now progressed within the SAPS to 72% black, 2% Indian, 10% coloured, 14% white. Could we have some idea of what the ideal targets are? What are we aiming to achieve within the SAPS as far as this race categorisation is concerned? I'm not too sure, because it's referred to as progress. So if 72.5% black, et cetera, those figures, if that's still progress, what are we aiming at? What are figures that will be considered to be acceptable to the career management staff? Looking at the supply chain management, there are now 41,921 vehicles, and I need to know what the total is that we need for optimal service delivery. I'm still getting calls endlessly. I had a difficulty. I phoned the SAPS. They said they had no vehicles. Or in many instances, they say, can you come and fetch us to come and deal with your problem? I mean, that's absolutely unacceptable in the extreme. They must have vehicles. But what are we aiming at as a total? And also, have they finally dealt with the issue of the inappropriate allocation of vehicles, where we have 4x4s assigned to SAPS in highly built up areas, and then non-4x4s out in the rural areas where they can't go and visit the areas that they're supposed to be guarding. Firearms, yes, they've taken on another. I see the numbers are dropping, so presumably they're almost on top of the situation. But are shortages still being experienced at station level? That has been an issue. Has it been dealt with? And are the numbers that they're now supplying to fill shortage areas or to actually replace lost firearms, lost by SAPS members? And then finally, of the existing staff contingent, we were looking at the bulletproof vest situation. There do seem to be absolutely sufficient bulletproof vests for the SAPS members. Yes, I know it's a problem. They don't want to wear them because they're heavy, bulky, almost impossible to be active in. I mean, especially in the incredible heats we experience around the country. Two issues. Have we really looked seriously at an improved high-tech replacement for these extraordinary, I think they're 13 kilogram bulletproof vests. Do we have something that we could replace them with, even if we import them, or we look to manufacturing them locally? It's a huge, huge issue for our members. And finally, the reservists. There does seem to be a shortfall of bulletproof vests amongst the reservists. What is the situation? I see it's not detailed in this document. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just briefly, it's a more financial question, but it's related to the other questions my colleague has asked. You say there's a healthy balance between compensation expenditure and other expenditure, but I also have complaints all the time about vehicles and maintenance of vehicles, and that's not being done. What I want to know is there actually sufficient money allocated to buying new vehicles? If not, how much more do we need? And if there is, in fact, enough, then why is it that there are never enough vehicles for the active members? The other related to that is that people allegedly take vehicles home often, and then people come on duty and there aren't enough vehicles for the people on duty. When are they allowed to take vehicles home, and if so, when and how and who? And then just on your equipment that you're upgrading, and I don't see anything about IT equipment, and I'm very concerned about the number of stations that don't seem to have access to emails, simple emails. What are you doing about upgrading the IT equipment, and how soon is that going to happen? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also take this opportunity first to congratulate the National Commissioner, and congratulations. I hope we're going to be able to work together. It's your biggest challenge, of course. We all agree that crime is one of our biggest challenges in the country, and so it is in the interest of all of us to help you in this mammoth task to bring the levels of crime down. So, but as I was saying, Chairperson, I hope the National Commissioner will do come. Now, not on this, as a National Commissioner, probably, of course, with this team to say, this is where I want to take the fight of crime. This is my program. This is how I'm going to deal with it. I mean, leaders operate definitely differently. I hope there will be time. But I'm sure before he does that, we'll have to, of course, to consult all his generals. And after the generals have been consulted and the lieutenant generals, and then I think we'll come back to us and say, this is my plan. I hope you will facilitate that, Comrade Chairperson, so that when we ask him, we say, but you did say this. Coming to this, Comrade Chairperson, the issue of enhancing the capacity of detectives, forensic and intelligence, I think I would have more been happier if we were, because if you look at when we're debating the budget, there was that general feeling that the budget for, especially for these three,
Of course, the minister did commit that he's addressing the budget was not adequate enough. So I would have been happier if they had told us that there is a plan to address that, because if you don't have the sufficient resources to do the job, talking about enhancement of detective forensic and intelligence capacities is going to be more theory than what can be done. I think the other question, of course, has been taken care of, so I'm not going to repeat it, the number of police and that thing, but I'm also, I thought we would be briefed as to what is it that the police are doing to bring the levels down of the number of police who are killed on duty. Because the number of police killed on duty in South Africa is becoming a major concern. I mean, it is not something which we can just pretend that it's not existing. So I would have hoped that we would be briefed as to if they have planned to bring the surely by now they should have started as to what are the causes of so many police being killed on duty, and what is it that they are doing to arrest that thing not escalating out of control. You know, the training happened, you know, some years ago when we turned around, there was a great number of police were functionally illiterate. Now, and that was a major, major problem. Now, I would have been happy if the commissioner just indicated to us whether that program of AVET is successful. How many, because at that time it was a huge number. I can't remember the figures now, of police who were functionally illiterate, and which was affecting their performance in the police. And also in the training, you see, we've been complaining, of course, we did say we will get a full briefing on this Domestic Violence Act. What is this? Of course, probably too early now to hear when they tell us it's a problem of training, or what, that there seems to be inability to make a breakthrough in so far as the domestic violence is concerned. Well, the issue of the disciplinary, I would have more been interested to know how many police in the moment are going through a disciplinary process, because that would indicate to us, you might not get the figures as 20, but are we having a number of police in the country who are going through? Because that would indicate whether the morale of the police is going up or going down, and how many of them are in suspension with full pay. Because this also has been a matter of concern that you, of course, not only in the police service, it is in the countries, in the whole public service, where you've got a number of people who are paid whilst they are doing nothing. Because one of the ladies said that they are improving so that the disciplinary processes can be speeded up. Because I think that is important.
There's one that does not know.
No, this one has already been said. I'm not going to repeat it. The improvement of the quality of bulletproof. Because there is a general feeling amongst police that there is need. It's not good to say instructions have been given, but is there no way that we can get our police some comfortable bulletproof? And I'm not saying
bulletproofs will always be uncomfortable. But I believe that we can get something at least which, whilst you instruct, you give the instructions with some clear conscience, that you are not just giving an instruction which is to some extent inhumane. Thank you.
Reverend Mishwe, I think you will be last one. Then we'll break for tea. Then we'll take other hands when we come back from tea.
Thank you, Chairperson, for short questions. The first one has to do with the disciplinary cases. I see the targets from 205 to 206 have been to finalize 70% of our outstanding cases. And the following year, 06, 07, also 70%. So what I want to know is whether this 70%, including the 30% that was left the previous year, otherwise there is going to be a backlog. Because if they only target 70%, what happens to the 30%? Is it included in the 70% that is mentioned the following year or not? And the second question, under career management, a statement was made that policing is no more about muscles and speed. Now, we see criminals at times resisting arrest. Without muscles, I'm interested to know what they're going to do. And sometimes we see criminals running away. A statement was made that police have to look at their fitness, which I agree with, because many times they're outrun by the criminals. So is it helpful to say policing is no more about muscle speed, or is muscles and speed still needed to do effective policing? And my third question have to do with the bulletproofs that are kept for reservists. There has been a number of break-ins into police storerooms where even drugs have been stolen. Now I want to know whether these bulletproofs are properly secured, that will not be told sometimes that there has been a breaking in and a number of bulletproofs have disappeared. And lastly, I'm interested to know whether the SANDF is definitely going to take over border control, particularly before the 2010 Soccer World Cup, because there is a major crisis at our borders. So are the police going to continue battling with this, or is the SANDF going to take over? And if yes, when is that going to happen? Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are going to break for tea at 11 o'clock, 11 on the dot. Honorable Angie will ask her questions. Can we break for tea? And Mr. Bloom.